Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello, everybody. Our first guest today has a unique perspective on the world of Mitt Romney. Her name is Joanna Brooks, and she's a progressive Mormon. She's an English professor, a scholar of American religion, you might say, at San Diego State University. She's a correspondent with the website Religion Dispatches, and she writes a blog called Ask Mormon Girl. She's in New York to address the Council on Foreign Relations about religion and the 2012 elections, and she now has a book called The Book of Mormon Girl, Stories from an American Faith. Joanna Brooks, thanks so much for stopping by our studio while you're in New York. Welcome to WNYC.
Brian, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Your blog, Ask Mormon Girl, this is a little tongue-in-cheek, but kind of to explain Mormonism to non-Mormons?
Yes, and, you know, also to answer heartfelt questions from Mormons like me who find themselves as progressives a little out of sync sometimes with a tradition that's been known for its conservatism.
Right. So you're self-labeled a feminist, a politically progressive person in general. I see your media appearances include Melissa Harris Perry on MSNBC the other day, and the Center for American Progress named you one of 13 religious women to watch in 2012. So would you call yourself a progressive Mormon?
That's exactly what I call myself. I'm a progressive Mormon. I'm a Mormon feminist. I'm married to a Jewish man. I live a sort of unorthodox Mormon life, but I feel deeply about my faith, and I care about it.
Is progressive Mormon not an oxymoron?
You know, it may come as news to your listeners that we exist. You know, there are Mormon Democrats. There are Mormons who take inspiration from their faith the way Jews take inspiration from their faith, progressive Catholics, that our faith obliges us to care for others. And we interpret that to progressive politics.
Your book has been reviewed in one place that said this is a story of deeply loving one's faith, surviving its narrowness, renouncing its arrogance. Do you deeply love Mormonism?
I do. I was raised in a very observant Mormon family in Southern California. From the time I was very young, Mormonism profoundly shaped my sense of my purpose in life, which was to live by some pretty strict rules, to be different from the mainstream, but also to love and serve other people. So this great sense of purpose and devotion, that's what Mormonism gave me.
So listeners, with Mitt Romney, the presidential nominee presumed of the Republican Party, and our guest here in the studio, let's take her at her word and in the spirit of her blog. Call up with anything you want to ask Mormon Girl, 212-433-WNYC. Realize she is not a spokesperson no. For the Romney campaign.
Or the church. I'm an independent voice on Mormonism.
212-433-9692, or you can post it to WNYC.org. And I want to get into some very specific Romney stuff, because you've written very interestingly about this controversial article in Bloomberg Businessweek that has a controversial cover anyway,
right,
and how Mitt Romney's capitalism is rooted firmly in Mormon capitalism. We'll get to that. But just on this description of you, again, you deeply love your faith, but do you also see yourself as surviving the narrowness of it, to refer again to that quote?
When I was 21 years old and a student at Brigham Young University, where I had found feminism at BYU, there were feminist professors at BYU. The university fired the feminist professors. The church excommunicated a number of feminist intellectuals and progressives. And it absolutely broke my heart, because my progressivism came, as it does for many other people of faith, from my convictions. And so I set out on about a 10-year journey to figure out if it was possible to be a progressive and a Mormon.
Was there anything in your own personal experience that helped shape your politics?
My personal experience of growing up Mormon?
Yeah, anything.
Of course. I mean, I always felt like the only one in the room. I knew what it meant to be different. You know, to look around the room and say, none of these kids have read the Book of Mormon. None of them believe that. I'm the only one. So I've always identified more with people who feel different in American society, who have experienced. Mormons experience a mild form of social prejudice. You know, I've experienced that. I've been taunted by born-again Christians, you know, in junior high school, you know, in high school, the whole way through. So I've always found myself identifying with people who find themselves a little bit on the margins, and also hunger for a better world. I was raised with stories of pioneer ancestors who crossed the plains to build this place called Zion, this better world, and that vision has always stayed with me.
Now, you wrote about the controversial cover of this week's Bloomberg Businessweek magazine. The story is Inside the Mormon Empire. That's the title, the headline, about the Mormon context of Mitt Romney's approach to business. But for people who haven't heard about the controversy, the cover is an artist rendering of John the Baptist blessing the founders of Mormonism and saying, quote, "And thou shalt build a shopping mall, own stock in Burger King, and open a Polynesian theme right. park in Hawaii, and that shall be largely exempt from the frustrations of tax."
Right.
Were you offended?
You know, I'm a progressive Mormon. I've seen the Book of Mormon musical. I only cringed at one part in the musical, but I gasped when I saw the cover. And here's why. This is not what we need. We need to have a good conversation both within Mormonism and in the larger world about what makes for a responsible church, about what makes for corporate responsibility, the church's corporate holdings. You know, there are Mormons who reacted to the article itself. The article itself was pretty great, straight-ahead reporting that addressed the opacity of church finances, that addressed questions about the level of humanitarian giving on the part of the church. There are Mormons who really want to have that conversation, but the cover made it seem like the whole subject was just shameful and that there was something, you know, the Anti-Defamation League came out against the cover and said, look, this made it seem like the church from its founding was nefarious and illegitimate. It's like, yeah, that's not what we need. We need to have grown-up, clear, robust conversations, you know, everywhere in American life, but also within religion about our priorities, about social responsibility.
Listeners, we'll get to your calls in a minute. Joanna Brooks, who, among other things, writes the blog Ask Mormon Girl. If you have anything you want to ask Mormon Girl, 212-433-WNYC. And in the context of her new book, The Book of Mormon Girl, 212-433-9692. The Broadway producers aren't suing you for copyright infringement.
I'm not worried about the producer. I'm worried about, you know, the Book of Mormon, the title itself. No, it was a cheeky title, but trying to tell a human story about a faith that is often misunderstood.
Right. So you're offended by the cover, but Mormons shouldn't be offended by the Book of Mormon Girl as a title.
Look, I take my faith pretty seriously. It's clear in the book. I'm not cartooning it. You know, it's kind of touchy when someone cartoons one of the founding moments of your faith.
You write that the article in Bloomberg Businessweek raises worthy questions about the transparency of church finances. You just said that,
right,
too, but misses the question of what motivates Mormon enterprise. What do you think does motivate them to build shopping malls, invest right. in Burger King, et cetera? Is it simple empire building?
There is a 170-year history at play here. You know, since the church's founding in the 1830s, 1840s, Mormons have often settled in their own communities and tried to establish a form of economic self-sufficiency, in part because there's been sort of antagonism between non-Mormons and Mormons wherever Mormons have lived. That's starting to evaporate as Mormons assimilate now. But that drive for self-sufficiency certainly motivated the founding of church enterprises with the move to Utah in the 19th century. You know, I think today, you know, and again, the church is fairly opaque with its finances and its reasons, but with some of the most, you know, canny observers of the church have thought is that there's an attempt to build an investment base that can support the church now in the global South. As it expands worldwide, the church builds a lot of buildings. It builds fairly spectacular temples. You know, as the majority now of the Mormon church population shifts outside the United States to countries where there's lower income, they're going to need investments to support this infrastructure.
What are the fastest growing countries for Mormonism today?
Well, you know, a decade or two ago, it was South America now and Asia. Now there's tremendous growth starting in Africa. It's the global South.
So what does Mormonism, founded in the context of the American Old West, you know, white Euro-American settlers expanding into Utah, have to say to people in the 20th century developing world?
In the 21st century.
21st century.
Well, you know, at the core of Mormonism is a theology that life is extremely purposeful, that we have, you know, that our souls, you know, came to this earth, that we lived before we came to this earth, and that our purpose here is to address life's challenges and to show ourselves capable and worthy of returning to God, and that we'll be in the eternities with our families. It's a beautiful and fairly distinctive element of Mormon theology. We don't go to heaven alone. We go with our families. That is tremendously appealing to people in any, you know, emerging economy, any emerging nation, that there is a purpose to life. You know, there is a point of being here, and that you can, if you make good choices, enjoy an afterlife with your family.
And You write that the Mormon quest for wealth is no simple story of the prosperity gospel. It's not Creflo Dollar.
Right.
But the Business Week article quotes the head of a church-owned holding company who says, quote, "We believe that a person who is impoverished temporally cannot blossom spiritually."
Right.
That sounds like you can't become enlightened if you're poor.
It does sound like, yeah, and you know, there's a lot in that article that has raised questions for progressive Mormons like me, people who want to ask, you know, is a luxury shopping mall the best investment vehicle for a church? You know, could we have invested in low-income housing? Could we have invested in wind farms? Is there something we could have done, still in the spirit of the church trying to develop an investment base to support its global growth, that would have been a little more socially conscious? You know, but where that one statement comes from is this long Mormon tradition of taking care of our own. Even during the Great Depression, the church developed its own pretty substantial welfare facilities. I mean, there are ranches across the country. You know, as a kid, I canned chicken noodle soup in a cannery in Los Angeles that went to Mormons in need. I mean, physically, hands-on. Uh-huh. I put chicken noodle soup in a can as a Mormon serving other Mormons who were hungry. You know, and so there's a sense that we take care of our own and that people can't focus on spiritual things until they're fed physically. It's a basic Christian principle. Kind
and of. So if you raise money through a luxury shopping mall and that's more effective than passing the hat around the church pews.
There's an extreme pragmatism, you know, that takes place in Mormon culture and these financial decision makings. They're operating like a business. Where's the best return on the investment?
So how does all this explain Mitt Romney and Bain Capital and offshore bank accounts? Or does it?
That's a great question. See, it's important to put Romney in the context of Mormon history and so that Romney came of age in this moment when the church was transitioning from this regional American upstart to an international bureaucracy. And he was trained and groomed through that leadership structure. All young men in Mormonism are ordained to priesthoods. The lay priesthood, Mitt Romney was ordained, has taken his place with a lifetime of church service. And in his church service, he learned to be extremely disciplined. He learned to, you know, serve the interests of the bureaucracy. And, you know, he learned a high level of institutional loyalty. And that has played out through his entire career, political and business. He's going to serve the interests of the large institutions he's invested in. He's going to be extremely disciplined. He's going to keep his personal business to himself. And he's going to be extremely pragmatic and strategic about maximizing returns.
We will continue in a minute with Joanna Brooks, senior correspondent at Religion Dispatches, professor at San Diego State University, and author now of The Book of Mormon Girl, a memoir of an American faith. And per the title of her blog, Ask Mormon Girl, we will take your questions right after this with anything you want to ask Mormon Girl. Our lines are full. When people finish up, you can call 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Joanna Brooks, senior correspondent at Religion Dispatches and author of the blog Ask Mormon Girl and now The Book of Mormon Girl, a memoir of an American faith. And Jessica in Floral Park, what do you want to ask Mormon Girl? Jessica, you there? Let's see. Maybe if I click that.
Yes.
Jessica?
Also on the blog.
That's not working. How about Chris in Piscataway? Chris, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Thank you for calling.
Good morning. The question I want to ask the young lady is the whole black people is kind of inferior type of thing that was taught by the Mormon church. I want to know whether when was it abandoned or it was changed, and is it safe to assume that if Mitt Romney was in the church around that time, was he taught that philosophy that black was inferior, and also was it taught to his kids, obviously, depending on the time it was done away with? If it was before, then I say, I guess he was taught something different. But if it was done whilst he was still in there and his kids, it means that he was taught whilst he was in the Mormon church that black people was inferior, or however it was posed or phrased in the church. She'll tell.
Right. It's a central question. Chris, thank you.
Yeah, it's a very important question. You know, the church, for about 100-year period in the history of the LDS Church, priesthood, black men were not ordained to the priesthood, men of African descent. And there were a number of folk teachings that came from American Protestant folk theology on race that Mormonism absorbed to try to legitimate why. Cain, Ham, all these old terrible stories from the Bible that have been abused in the service of racism for years and years and years. I grew up with some of the stories. I grew up in the 1970s. And at the same time, you know, as soon as the priesthood ban went out the window, those stories started to disappear very quickly from Mormon talk. And surveys now show that the number of people in Mormonism who actually believe those old stories is in the single digits. So, you know, people like Romney may have at one time been taught that black people were descended from Cain or Ham or marked by a curse that prevented them from... But, you know, with the abandonment of the priesthood ban, which Romney has said came as a relief to him, people have been pretty happy to shed the old racist folk theology as well. You'll find it in rural pockets of Utah. You'll find it among older members of the church everywhere. There is a question about how Romney deliberated with that, with the moral heaviness of that question when he was a member. He was an adult before the 1978 ban was lifted, you know. So did he think seriously? There were Mormons who questioned the ban all through. There were Mormons who wrote scholarly articles tracing out the history of the ban, showing that it was aberrant and not the will of God. It was just, you know, a mistake on the part of the institution. Did Romney care about that question? Did he think about it seriously? And how will that translate into his responsibility as a president to look out for the interests of all American citizens? That's still an open question he's never answered.
Here's a clip of Mitt Romney trying to place his religious faith, his Mormonism, in the context of American religion in general.
I'm very proud of my faith and believe that the values that I have are every bit as American as other faiths in our great land. As people get to know individuals like myself and my faith, they realize, okay, you've got a different religion, but our values, our beliefs about what's right for America flow from the same Judeo-Christian ethics and philosophy. I think all of the faiths of this country draw us closer to God, make us better people.
Mitt Romney from an interview at BigThink.com in 2007. And I want to follow up on something that he said in there that I think contradicts something that you wrote. And that is, you've got a different, you meaning he has a different religion, but our values and beliefs about what's right for America flow from the same Judeo-Christian ethics and philosophy. But I think I've seen in your writing a distinction between Mormonism and what you call traditional Judeo-Christian America or traditional Christianity and Judaism. Have you?
Well, the historical tradition is rooted really firmly. We grow right out of American Protestantism. You know, Mormons read the Bible, take the Old Testament, the New Testament, Scripture. Mormons have a Christian theology that differs on some technical points from mainline Protestantism, certainly from Catholicism. There are additional levels of theology that were elaborated and developed during the 19th century that do absolutely distinguish us from mainline Protestantism. But at its root, we're supposed to be, you know, of the Christian tradition.
But some of it has to do with the relationship to money, some of the difference. This was in the Bloomberg article, too.
I don't know if I'd agree with that. I mean, look, churches are businesses. Is Business Week so naive not to realize that churches are businesses too? Every church has questions about asset management. You know, they have staff, they have employees, they worry about promotion. You know, the question is how responsible, how are churches, you know, acting on their responsibility to take care of their, you know, of their properties and their people? How do they do it? And Mormonism is marked by this extremely pragmatic, this aggressively pragmatic approach to its asset management. You know, so is Romney. There's a similarity there. Is it a similarity that distinguishes them from the rest of Christianity? I don't think that's where the difference lies.
Does anything in your understanding of Mitt Romney's Mormonism explain his refusal to release tax returns prior to 2010? Ann Romney was out on one of the morning shows again today saying, you know, we have released everything you need to know. Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah. What's so painful about watching this refusal to release the tax returns develop is that one of the unkind characterizations that is, you know, followed Mormonism for the last 100 plus years is that Mormons are secretive and duplicitous. We saw there was the seating of the first Mormon senator in the early 20th century. His name was Reed Smoot. I mean, there was the multi-year show trial in Congress over whether he could even serve because this fear of Mormon secrecy. And unfortunately, Romney's behavior plays into that popular judgment about Mormons. So, I mean, I'd like to see him release the returns, too. His opacity, though, there are so many things he is terrified to talk about, his faith being one of them. He really does not want to talk about Mormonism at all, which is unfortunate in many respects. There was an op-ed in the LA Times today that says, look, his faith humanizes him. Please talk about it. Otherwise, he seems like the Tin Man, you know. So, there is an opacity in general that characterizes Romney's demeanor that's not out of line with the institutional opacity of the church.
Fascinating. Jessica in Floral Park. Now I think we have you. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to let your caller know I appreciate her viewpoint. I am a born-again Christian. I am a card-carrying Democrat with an Obama sticker on the back of my car for 4 years. And I just think it's very important to have people like your guest on who break the stereotype of what our religions and progressivism is stereotyped as. You know, it's very important. I believe democratic values go along with my Christianity. And, you know, like she was saying earlier, I feel like a misfit, an outcast. I live in a Republican town, and I was even questioned about my Obama sticker. So it's just, and yet I share the faith of everybody I live around, and that just doesn't seem to be enough. So it's a very interesting juxtaposition, the religion and the politics.
Jessica, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Jessica. You're welcome to come over to my house for dinner anytime. We could share stories about how it feels to be a progressive person of faith.
So what is it with other evangelicals, I'm presuming not Jessica, but some large percentage of them, according to polls, who don't actually accept Mormonism as Christianity?
Right. It's important to know that evangelical Christians starting, and not just evangelicals, but, you know, mainline Southern Baptist Convention, beginning in the 1960s and 70s, produced actually an anti-Mormon curriculum. They considered Mormonism a cult, and people learned in Sunday school, in Baptist Sunday schools, in evangelical churches, that Mormonism was deceptive and devious and to be feared, and they actually mounted battle against Mormon. Where I grew up, people picketed my churches. Born-again Christians picketed my churches where I grew up in Orange County, California. You know, they taped notes in my lockers. So, you know, there is a longstanding...
Over what?
That I was a Mormon and that I was a member of a...
It's a cult.
A cult,
but
right?
A cult of Jesus, who they also believe in.
But there are theological differences, not grand ones in some regards, but the rhetoric at the time was to maximize those differences, to depict Mormons as being alien and strange and scary. And so, you know, our churches were picketed, you know, mean notes were left in my locker when I was 13 years old. It was very upsetting, you know, but, you know, so that's where it comes from. That is where some of this deep-seated evangelical resistance to Romney's candidacy come from. But you know what? Partisanship is stronger than sectarianism in this country. If they get to the polls, they're going to vote for Romney in November. End of story.
George in Bay Ridge is asking a version of a question that a number of people are calling up to ask the same question. Hi, George.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if it's just lack of publicity about it, but I never heard of a Mormon soup kitchen open to the public in general. And I ask it in the context of, tax benefits. I think, like, on Mitt Romney's last tax statement, his only tax statement that he's released, he's actually given more money to the Mormon Church than he has to the federal government for his taxes. I think that's another wrinkle on why he's not letting more out. But the whole idea of giving charitable tax abatements is that it's for the greater good of society.
George, let me get an answer. He's got two really good questions in there. I think we can separate them. One is there Mormon outreach for the poor like there are church soup kitchens to which anybody can come and get food? You talked earlier about canning chicken soup for poor Mormons, but you said poor Mormons.
No, that's right. You know, and one of the questions that has come up among Mormon people after the Business Week article, which reported that 0.7% of the church's annual profits go to global humanitarian giving, has been screening. Really, are we doing enough? That number came as a shocker to a lot of people. The church, you know, tends to be fairly private, but it does have global humanitarian enterprises, disaster relief, hugely active in disaster relief, and it contributes in all the communities where it lives to local relief efforts if there's a disaster and to care for the poor. But historically, there has been an emphasis on caring for our own people, making sure that they it comes from the moment in the 1930s when the leaders of the church says we need to stay off the welfare rolls.
Which relates to his other question.
Right.
If Romney gives some large number of dollars to charity, but most of that is his tithing to the Mormon church, is that really giving to the community at large, or is that giving to your own? Do you see those as morally different?
It's an important question. And, you know, I've heard from Mormons around the world this week who've been processing the Business Week, you know, article and its implications. And I've heard many progressives Progressive Mormons calling for, you know, more open participation by the church in community-based relief efforts. You know, you'll see Mormons out. They have Mormon Helping Hands Days where I live, where Mormons all put on, you know, yellow T-shirts and go to the park and help clean things and open trail. You know, Mormons like doing community service. I think there's a chance here to be more open and more involved in interfaith efforts to serve the poor.
Do you tithe?
I pay offerings. Yes, I do. Yeah.
It's a big ask to give 10% if people literally tithe to the church.
Yeah. Been doing it since I was a kid.
Wow. Last thing, you were here in New York. One of the purposes of your trip was to talk to the Council on Foreign Relations yesterday about religion and the 2012 elections. Does Mitt Romney's Mormonism suggest anything about what his foreign policy might be like?
You know, and that's another question where if we look at how Romney has governed, how he has operated in business, we see some clear patterns. He is very disciplined. He is very loyal to the institutions he's invested in. And he's very interested in pragmatic problem solving and yielding the best possible return for his investors. In the case of foreign policy, his foreign policy advising team is basically majority neoconservative. It's virtually indistinguishable from Bush, you know, Bush's foreign policy. There is nothing that he's going to bring from his religion, it appears, to create some new special foreign policy vision. He's kind of carrying out a throwback foreign policy approach.
Joanna Brooks is a senior correspondent at religiondispatches.com. You can read her stuff there. Professor of English and Comp Lit at San Diego State University. She writes the blog Ask Mormon Girl, and now she's the author of The Book of Mormon Girl, A Memoir of an American Faith. Thank you so much. I think people have learned really a lot from your appearance
today. Well, thank
you
for having me. Thank you.